My name is Mike Selig with KXRW Radio in Vancouver. KXRW is an all-volunteer-run, community-supported radio station. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our friends at Say Chow Catering, Columbia River Tap Room and Eatery, private events including wine tasting, wine dinners, appetizer parties, and cooking demos. Say Chow Tap Room and Eatery boasts space for private events or drop in for a quick refreshment and live music on Thursday and Friday evenings. Say Chow, Greater Vancouver's premier catering company, is conveniently located at 2501 Southeast Columbia Way, Suite 270 in Vancouver, just a stone's throw away from the Columbia River. More information available at say-chow.com. That's say-chio.com or at 360-210-5522. If you were to stand across the street from the Kiggins Theater in downtown Vancouver during the daytime, you would notice the subtle Art Deco detailing that wraps around the top of the building, or the carved artwork that hides above the red and white marquee in the front of the tall beige building. The Kiggins Theater was built in 1935 in the middle of the Great Depression. It opened April 24, 1936. It was said at the time that the lobby had gleaming silver chandeliers and paintings on the walls hand-painted by R.B. Roberts, a member of the British Artists Society, who had also painted Windsor Castle. The new theater boasted of a modern air circulating system to heat and cool the patrons who would have paid 10 cents for admission. Late October, when it gets dark early, the Kiggins Marquee becomes an oasis of light. People are drawn here because they want to be with other people and see something that is unique and unavailable anywhere else. That was the case for why people came to see and hear a group of radio actors from Reimagined Radio who had assembled to perform the classic radio play, War of the Worlds.
It's not true.
I was standing outside the theater, about ready to go in, when a man, smartly dressed in all black and carrying a large portfolio under his arm, walked into the light. It was Joe Clemens. Joe is many things. He's an executive for a local healthcare corporation, a founding board member of KXRW Radio, and producer of the show The Common Good. But that night, Joe was a radio actor.
All right. Well, Joe, why don't you tell me what's going on tonight?
Oh, we have a little program being put on here at the Kiggins Theater. It's the 80th anniversary tonight of the War of the Worlds, famous radio broadcast, and we are redoing it here in Vancouver with a Vancouver twist.
Well, now you got me curious here. What's the Vancouver twist?
Oh, you'll have to come in and listen to it, or listen to it later on the air.
Now, this is being live-streamed, recorded.
Well, probably the easiest place to go find it is on the KXRWVancouver.org website, or you can go to Facebook and look for Reimagined Radio. The hashtag is also available on Twitter, Reimagined Radio.
Very good. Well, I imagine you got to get ready and get backstage and prepare for your role. Tell me what role you're playing.
So tonight I have two small parts. The first is, ironically enough, Vice President of Operations for a radio station, Harry McDonald. And a little bit later, I play a radio operator, officially radio operator number one. And there's a lot of background noise, and so I get to play background noise. And I'm used to that, so that's good.
Very good. Thanks for your time, Joe. Good luck.
Pardon me? Yes, it started right now.
Walking into a historic theater is the closest you can get to going back in time. I learned that the first movie shown at the Kiggins was An Escape from the Depression, a light romantic comedy starring Claudette Colbert and Melvin Douglas.
Mr. Hoyt is too dense to understand the appeal of beautiful white linens.
The trouble with you, Miss Fitzpatrick, is you know nothing of the appeal of men's pajamas.
I beg your pardon.
Scott? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Mr. Barker's not in yet. I'll take the matter up with him as soon as he arrives.
I found a seat in the back row of the theater. There was Joe on stage with about 15 other performers, also dressed in black. John Oberg, who was also with our station, was huddled off stage, running a soundboard and recording the performance. The producer of Reimagined Radio is John Barber. He's a faculty member of Washington State University Vancouver's Creative Media and Digital Culture program. John is a tall, lean man. His glasses and mustache complete the perfect image of a college professor. John stepped up to the microphone and the evening began.
Well, good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for being here tonight. What a welcome sight to look out into this great historic theater and see no empty seats. My name is John Barber, and it's a real pleasure for me to welcome you to another performance by the Reimagined Radio Project. I appreciate you being here, and it's a real pleasure to say for not only the audience here in the theater, but also for those of you that are listening at home, that tonight's performance is coming to you live and direct without benefit of commercial interruption from the historic Kiggins Theater in beautiful downtown Vancouver, Washington, USA. Tonight, we offer our reimagined adaptation of The War of the Worlds as part of this worldwide celebration. Thank you for joining us tonight, and please enjoy our performance.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're broadcasting and streaming live tonight from the historic Kiggins Theater in downtown Vancouver, Washington, USA. And now, we bring you this reimagined radio performance of The War of the Worlds.
We know now that in the early years of the 21st century, this world was being watched closely by intelligences greater than man's and yet as mortal as his own. We know now that as human beings busied themselves about their various concerns, they were scrutinized and studied, perhaps almost as narrowly as a man with a microscope might scrutinize the transient creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, humankind has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space. Yet across an immense ethereal gulf, intellects vast, cool, and unsympathetic regarded this earth with envious eyes and slowly and surely drew their plans against us. In the 39th year of the 20th century came the Great Disillusionment. It was near the end of October. Business was better. The war scare was not so present. More people went back and forth and back to work. Sales were picking up. On this particular evening, October 30, the Crosley Service estimated that 32 million people were listening in to radios. We interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before 8 Pacific time, Professor Farrell of the Mount Jennings Observatory, Chicago, Illinois, reports observing several explosions of incandescent gas occurring at regular intervals on the planet Mars. The spectroscope indicates the gas to be hydrogen and moving toward the Earth with enormous velocity. Professor Pearson, retired from the observatory at Princeton and now living in Vancouver, confirms Farrell's observation and describes the phenomena as, quote, like a jet of blue flame shot from a gun, unquote. Due to the unusual nature of this occurrence, we have arranged an interview with noted astronomer Professor Rowena Pearson here in Vancouver, who will give us her views on the event. In a few moments, we will take you to her private observatory atop the Smith Tower in downtown Vancouver. We return you until then to the music of Ramon Raquello and his orchestra. We are now ready to take you to the top of the Smith Tower, one of the tallest buildings in Vancouver, where Carl Phillips, our commentator, will interview Professor Rowena Pearson.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carl Phillips here, speaking to you from the observatory of Professor Rowena Pearson. Professor Pearson maintains this private observatory atop the Smith Tower in downtown Vancouver. I'm standing in a large semicircular room, pitch black, except for an oblong split in the ceiling. Through this opening, I can see a sprinkling of stars that cast a kind of frosty glow over the intricate mechanisms of the huge telescope. The ticking sound you hear is the vibration of the clockwork. Professor Pearson stands directly above me on a small platform, peering through a giant lens. I ask you to be patient, ladies and gentlemen, during any delay that may arise during our interview. Besides her ceaseless watch on the heavens, Professor Pearson may be interrupted by telephone or other communications. During this period, she's in constant touch with the astronomical centers of the world. Professor, would you please tell our radio audience exactly what you see as you observe the planet Mars through your telescope?
Nothing unusual at the moment, Mr. Phillips. A red disk swimming in a blue sea, transverse stripes across the disk, quite distinct because Mars happens to be at the point nearest to Earth, in opposition, as we call it.
In your opinion, what do these transverse stripes signify, Professor Pearson?
From a scientific viewpoint, the stripes are merely the result of the atmospheric conditions peculiar to the planet.
Then you are quite convinced, as a scientist, that living intelligence as we know it does not exist on Mars.
I'd say the chances against that are 1,000 to 1.
And yet how do you account for those gas eruptions occurring on the surface of the planet at regular intervals?
Mr. Phillips, I cannot account for it.
By the way, Professor, for the benefit of our listeners, how far is Mars from Earth?
Approximately 40 million miles.
Well, that seems a safe enough distance. Just a moment, ladies and gentlemen. Someone has just handed Professor Pearson a message. Professor, may I read the message to the listening audience?
Certainly, Mr. Phillips.
9:15 p.m. Pacific time. Seismograph registered shock of almost earthquake intensity occurring within a radius of 20 miles of Vancouver. Please investigate. Signed, Lloyd Gray, Chief of Astronomical Division. Professor Pearson, could this occurrence possibly have something to do with the disturbances observed on the planet Mars?
Hardly, Mr. Phillips. This is probably a meteorite of unusual size, and its arrival at this particular time is merely a coincidence. However, we shall conduct a search as soon as daylight permits.
Thank you, Professor. Ladies and gentlemen, for the past 10 minutes, we've been speaking to you from the observatory at Vancouver, bringing you a special interview with Rowena Parsons.
Let's take a short break. A big thank you to CBD of Vancouver for supporting KXRW Vancouver and our sister station, X-Ray FM, Community Radio. CBD of Vancouver are dedicated to bringing wellness through concentrated CBD. The oil is derived from 0% THC, organic, non-GMO, industrial hemp. CBD American stores are located in Vancouver at 2700 Northeast Andreessen Road, Suite A5, and in Tigard, Oregon. More information available at 866-GOT-PAIN. That's 866-GOT-PAIN. And at cbdofvancouver.com. Community radio like this is brought to you by the generous support of our founding sponsors at Adco Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. Adco features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at adco1.com. That's ADCO, the number one, .com. Now let's get back to our show.
Carl Phillips again at the Wilmoth Farm in Elkton, Washington. Professor Pearson and myself made the 22 miles from Vancouver in 10 minutes to investigate a report of a meteor impact. We have just now arrived. I haven't had a chance to look around yet, but I guess that's it. I guess that's the thing, directly in front of me, half buried in a vast pit. I hardly know where to begin or how to paint for you a word picture of the strange scene before my eyes. It is like something out of a modern Arabian Nights. The object must have struck with terrific force. The ground is covered with splinters of a tree. It must have struck on its way down. And the bodies of three elk killed at impact lie outside the crater. What I can see of the object itself doesn't look very much like a meteor, at least not the meteors I've seen. It looks more like a huge cylinder. It has a diameter of, what would you say, Professor Pearson?
What's that?
What would you say? What is the diameter?
About 30 yards.
About 30 yards. The metal of the cylinder is, well, I've never seen anything like it. The color is a sort of yellowish white. A reddish glow lingers where the metal is still hot. Curious spectators now are pressing close to the object in spite of the efforts of the police to keep them back. Oh, they're getting in front of my line of vision. Would you mind standing to one side, please?
One side now. One side.
While the policemen are pushing the crowd back, here's Mr. Grover Wilmoth, owner of the farm here. He may have some interesting facts to add. Mr. Wilmoth, would you please tell the radio audience as much as you remember of this rather unusual visitor that dropped in your backyard?
Well, yeah, I was listening to the radio, and, you know, kind of drowsing, and...
And then you saw something.
Well, not first. I heard something.
And what did you hear?
Well, it was a hissing sound. It was kind of like... You know, kind of like a 4th of July rocket.
And then what?
Well, I turned my head out the window, and I would have swore I was just asleep and dreaming.
Yes?
Well, I seen a kind of greenish streak, and then zingo! Something smacked the ground and knocked me clear out of my chair.
Thank you, Mr. Wilmoth. Thank you.
Do you want me to tell you some more about it?
No, that is quite all right. That's plenty. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard Mr. Grover Wilmoth, owner of the farm where this thing has fallen. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there's something I haven't mentioned in all this excitement, but now it's becoming more distinct. Perhaps you've caught it already on your radio. Listen. Do you hear it? It's a curious scraping sound that seems to come from inside the object. I'll move the microphone nearer. Now we're not more than 25 feet away. Can you hear it now? Just a minute, something's happening. Ladies and gentlemen, this is terrific. This thing, the end of the thing is beginning to flake off. Yes, the top is beginning to rotate like a screw. The thing must be hollow.
It's moving!
Red hot! They'll burn to a cinder!
Oh, keep back there!
Keep those idiots back!
Keep back! Look out!
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the most terrifying thing I have ever witnessed. Wait a minute. Someone's crawling out of the hollow top. Someone or something. I can see peering out of that black hole two luminous discs. Are they eyes? It might be a face. It might be a... Something's wriggling out the shadow like a gray snake. Now it's another one, and another. They look like tentacles to me. There I can see the thing's body. It's large. Large as a bear, and it glistens like wet leather. But that face, ladies and gentlemen, it's indescribable. I can hardly force myself to keep looking at it. The eyes are black and gleam like a serpent. The mouth is V-shaped with saliva dripping from its rimless lips that seem to quiver and pulsate. The monster, or whatever it is, can hardly move. It seems weighed down by possibly gravity or something. The thing's raising up. The crowd falls back now. They've seen plenty. This is the most extraordinary experience. I cannot find the words. I'll pull this microphone with me as I talk. I'll have to stop the description until I can take a new position. Hold on, will you please? I'll be right back in a minute. A humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against the mirror. What's that? Oh, there's a jet of flame springing from the mirror, and it leaps right at the advancing men. Oh, it strikes them head on. Oh, good Lord, they're turning into flame. Oh, now the whole field is caught on fire. Oh, the woods, the barn, the gas tanks of automobiles, it's spreading everywhere. It's coming this way. About 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have just been handed a message that came in from Elkton by telephone. At least 40 people, including 6 state troopers, lie dead in a field east of the village of Elkton, their bodies badly burned and distorted. The next voice you hear will be that of General Montgomery Smith, commander of the state militia at Olympia, Washington.
I have been authorized by the government of Washington to place the counties of Clark, Cowlitz, and Skamania, as far west as Vancouver and east to Carson, under martial law. No one will be permitted to enter this area except by special pass issued by the state or military authorities. Thank you.
You have been listening to General Montgomery Smith, commanding the state militia at Olympia. In the meantime, further details of the catastrophe at Elkton are coming in. The strange creatures, after unleashing their deadly assault, crawled back into their pit and made no attempt to prevent the efforts of firemen to recover the bodies and extinguish the fire. Combined fire departments of Clark County are fighting the flames, which menace the entire countryside. We have been unable to establish any contact with our mobile unit at Elkton, but we hope to be able to return you there at the earliest possible moment. In the meantime, we take you, just one moment, please. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special statement from Mr. Harry McDonald, Vice President of Operations.
KXRW has received a request from the militia at Olympia to place at their disposal our entire broadcasting facilities. In view of the gravity of the situation and believing that radio has a responsibility to serve in the public interest at all times, we are turning over our facilities to the state militia at Olympia.
We take you now to the field headquarters of the state militia near Elkton, Washington.
This is Captain Lansing of the Signal Corps, attached to the state militia, now engaged in military operations in the vicinity of Elkton, Washington. Situation arising from the reported presence of certain individuals of unidentified nature is now under complete control. The cylindrical object, which lies in a pit directly below our position, is surrounded on all sides by 8 battalions of infantry. Now, wait a minute. I see something on the top of the cylinder. Oh, no. It's nothing. Nothing but a shadow. Now, the troops are on the edge of the Wilmoth Farm. 7,000 armed men closing in on an old metal tube. Wait. Something moving. Solid metal. Kind of a shield-like affair. Rising up out of the cylinder. And it's going higher. Higher. It's standing on legs. Actually reeling up on a sort of a metal framework. And it's reaching up above the trees. And the searchlights are on it. Now hold on.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make. Incredible as it may seem, both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes lead to the inescapable assumption that these strange beings who landed in the Washington farmlands and forests tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from the planet Mars.
As I set these notes down on paper, I'm obsessed by the thought that I may be the last living person on Earth. I have been hiding in this empty house near Elkton, Washington, a small island of daylight cut off by the black smoke from the rest of the world. Sun streams in the window, the black cloud of gas has lifted, and the scorched meadow to the north looks as though a black snowstorm has passed over them. I venture from the house and I make my way to the road, no traffic. Here and there are wrecked cars, baggage overturned, a blackened skeleton. I push on south and west. For some reason, I feel safer trailing these monsters than running away from them, and I keep a careful watch. I have seen the Martians feed. Should one of their machines appear over the top of the trees, I am ready to fling myself on the earth. I come to an apple tree. October apples are ripe and I fill my pockets. I must keep alive. I came at last to Vancouver. I was anxious to know the fate of the city. Cautiously, I made my way down the highway to where it turned into Main Street. I wandered through the Lincoln and the Hauk neighborhoods. I reached 14th Street, and there again were black powder and several bodies, and an evil, ominous smell from the gratings of the cellars of some of the houses. I stood alone looking over the railroad yard. I walked up Main in the direction of the strange powder, past silent shop windows, displaying their mute wares to empty sidewalks, past the Kiggins Theater, silent and dark. I watched a flock of blackbirds circling in the sky near Fort Vancouver. I hurried there. I caught sight of the hood of a Martian machine standing next to the bandstand on the parade ground, gleaming in the late afternoon sun. I rushed recklessly towards the location. From there I could see, standing in a silent row down towards the river, 19 of those great metal titans, their cowls empty and their great steel arms hanging listlessly by their sides. I looked in vain for the monsters that inhabit those machines. Suddenly, my eyes were attracted to the immense flock of blackbirds that circled to the ground. And there before my eyes, stark and silent, lay the Martians, with their hungry birds pecking and tearing brown shreds of flesh from their dead bodies. Later, when their bodies were examined in the laboratories, it was found that they were killed by the putrefactive bacteria against which their system were unprepared, slain after all man's defenses had failed by the humblest thing that God in his wisdom put upon this earth. Strange to watch children playing in the streets, and strange to see young people strolling on the green where the new grass heals the last black scars of a bruised earth. Strange to watch the sightseers enter the historical museum where the dissembled parts of the Martian machine are kept on public view. Strange when I recall the time when I first saw it, bright and clean cut, hard and silent, under the dawn of that last great day.
Thank you for listening to Reimagined Radio's production of War of the Worlds. I'd like to thank our friends and sponsors at Boomerang Therapy Works, where exercise is medicine. They offer a variety of one-on-one treatment options that can be tailored to your health and wellness. Boomerang Therapy Works provides physical therapy, massage therapy, personal trainers, exercise programs, group classes, and they specialize in customized Parkinson treatments. Boomerang Therapy Works is located in downtown Vancouver, just a few blocks south of the Kiggins Theater. Find out more at boomerangtherapyworks.com, where exercise is medicine. I'd also like to thank everyone at Vancouver's historic treasure, the Kiggins Theater. John Barber, the producer of Reimagined Radio, and their cast and crew. My name is Mike Seelig with Voices from Our Community. Thank you for listening and supporting KXRW Radio. One day I'd like to hear your voice too.